want to read the first five verses. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man, that is Job, was perfect and upright, one that feared God and eschewed evil. And there were born unto him seven sons and three daughters. His substance also was 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 she-asses, and a very great household, so that this man was the greatest of all the men of the east. And his sons went and feasted in their houses, every one his day, and sent and called for their three sisters to eat and to drink with them. And it was so, when the days of the feasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them, and rose up early in the morning, and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, "It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." Thus did Job continually. There's nothing in the book of Job that tells us who wrote the book. There's nothing in the book of Job that really tells us when the book of was written. There's no reference to the law. There's no reference to any of the patriarchs. There's no reference to the tabernacle. And because of that, most have drawn the conclusion that it was before Abraham's day. We don't have a problem with that. There's also no mention of Israel's history anywhere in the book. It really doesn't matter, though most spend a lot of time arguing when the book of Job was written or who may have wrote it. It really doesn't matter. It doesn't change one single thing when it was written or who wrote it. Again, it's just another example of people arguing over things that really have no bearing. But the book is in narrative form, told mostly through dialogue between Job and his friends. And it's a very moving book. It's a very profound book. It's a book that ought to stir us. It's certainly a book that has intrigued its readers throughout history. It's a book that possesses a character of its own. Really, there's no other book quite like it. And it's filled with valuable instruction, many warnings, many lessons for you and I to be to learn, to grasp. There's many approaches that one could take on the book. But you notice it opens with, "There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job." And we just want to consider those words. There was a man whose name was Job. There was a man whose name was Job. And that's what we want to speak on this evening, a man named Job. We all know the story. The book of Job tells of an almost unspeakable and unimaginable tragedy in this man's life. The commencement of the tragedy is recorded in verses 6 through 12, when Satan declared to God his philosophy of why this man whose name was Job served God. And Satan believed that the reason Job served God was because God blessed him. If you take away the blessings, he will not serve you. The only reason that Job is serving you is because you have blessed him. In verse 11, we hear Satan say, put forth thy hand now and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face. And that's true of a lot of people. And we see the Lord gave Satan permission. There's a lesson there. He gave him permission to take all that belonged to Job, but he put a restriction upon him. He says, put forth not only upon himself, put forth not thine hand. That is, you can take everything he has, but you do no harm to him physically. And then, of course, what follows is the details of the tragedies in verses 14 through 19. And they occur in four stages. We see that with the words, and there came a messenger, verse 14. Then verse 16, there came also another. That's the next stage of this tragedy. Verse 17, there came also another. That's the third stage of this tragedy. And then the fourth, while he was yet speaking, there came also another. And then you have Job's reaction to all of this in verses 20 through 22. He rent his mantle, shaved his head, fell down upon the ground, and worshipped. Not quite what Satan had figured. Job didn't curse God. Job worshipped the Lord. So it wasn't because of the blessings. That wasn't the reason Job served. And then in chapter 2, it opens with, again, there was a day. And this time Satan comes and he declares that if God were to take away Job's health, that Job would curse him. So once again, the Lord gives Satan permission. Again, Satan cannot do anything without permission from God. He gives him permission to take Job's health, but again with a restriction, but save his life. You can't kill him. You can make him sick, take away his health, but you cannot take his life. And then that was followed by a tragic turn of events regarding Job's health. We see in verse 7 of chapter 2, so went Satan forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot unto his crown. And then in verse 9, Job's wife becomes a discouragement to him. But then it is declared in verse 10, in all this did not Job sin with his lips. Going back to what Satan said, he will curse thee. In all this, and taking of all his material wealth, taking away his health, in all this, Job did not sin with his lips. In other words, Job did not curse the Lord. But we see Job worshipped. Now, the verses of our text, verses 1 through 5, are different than all the other verses in the book of Job. They are the only verses in the book that speak of before the tragedy. Following that, you have a description of the tragedy itself. And then, of course, after the tragedy, you have everything else follows the tragedy. So all the other verses speak of the details of the tragedy and the events after the tragedy. But only verses 1 through 5 speak of before the tragedy. And in verse 1, there is a description of the character or the person of this man named Job. And in verse 2 and verse 4, there is a description of this man's family. Verse 3, there is a description of his wealth. And in verse 5, there is a description of a particular habit that Job had. You put all of that together, and you have a portrait of this man named Job. You see again his character. And that's our thought, is the character of this man. We must realize this crucial truth. Who and what we are is what defines us. Circumstances do not define us. It's who we are that defines us. And that's proven all through the Word of God. And that this is why people try and try and try to do such and such. But if it's not who you are, you're going to fail. It's like an unsaved person trying to live a saved life. It's not going to work because it's not who you are. So this is a very crucial truth. It's who we are that defines us. And the sad truth is, most folks do not really want to take an honest look at who they are. They really don't. So let's look at the character of Job. But before we get into the actual character of Job, there was a man whose name was Job. There was a man. This man had a specific name, just like you and I. Speaks of the fact that he's real. This is a real individual. It's not an imaginary figure. It's not an angelic being. It's not some kind of superhuman. There was a man. There was a man. Like you and I, he consisted of flesh and blood. Therefore, he had human frailties. He had limitations. He was a man. He had a sinful nature. Having a sinful nature, he had sinful tendencies. And he had sinful passions. He was a man. Many times when we look at Bible characters, extraordinary Bible characters, people get the idea that they were some kind of being above human flesh, but that's not so. He was a man. Though he is an extraordinary man, he's not a normal man. He's extraordinary. In fact, God's testimony of him in Job 1, verse 8, and he says the same thing in chapter 2, verse 3. The Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant? God called him his servant. My servant Job. There's none like him in the earth. That's God's testimony of him. There's none like him. In other words, yes, he is a man, but he is an extraordinary individual. He is a man who lived above the ordinary. There's none like him in the earth. So he's not the norm. He's not the typical. He's not the common. He's not the routine. The usual, or the mainstream. There's none like him in the earth. In other words, he's peculiar. He's different. He's unusual as far as the world is concerned. He's a very puzzling individual to the world. He's not a normal man. Now, normality must have a standard, a pattern And what the world considers the norm must be in accord with the world's standards and pattern. If you are not in accord with the world's standards and patterns, you're not normal as far as the world is concerned. And who of God's people would want to be normal in this world is beyond us. So Job was above the norm. In fact, he is mentioned, I mean, outside of the book of Job, there are not very many references to this man. But in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 14, if we go over there, Ezekiel chapter 14, notice who this man is mentioned with. And we will just read verse 14, but you'll also see the same thing in verse 20. Though these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job. Noah, Daniel, and Job. These were not ordinary men. These were men who lived above the norm. So now looking into the character of this man. Again, he's flesh and blood. In that regard, he's no different than you and I. Born a sinner, just like us. Sinful nature, just like you and I. But he is an extraordinary individual. In verse 1, there was a man whose name was Job. And that man was perfect. That man was perfect. That doesn't mean he was sinless. Well, how do you know that? Well, if he was sinless, that would be contrary to all other scripture. So we know that's not what that means. The word perfect is used many times in the Word of God. And it doesn't mean sinless when referring to man. It does mean he's blameless. That is, you could look at the life of Job. There wasn't any one thing that you could pick out and make accusations based upon his character. It means he was very sincere. It means that he was true in the service of the Lord. It means that he was a spiritually mature individual. Spiritually mature means he was well balanced spiritually. Mature people are well balanced. It's very easy. People get off balance all the time. But he was spiritually mature. Notice also he was upright. That means that he was right in a spiritual sense. It also means that he was right-minded. Well, if you're right in a spiritual sense, you're also going to be right-minded. That is, you're going to think right. He was moral. He was ethical. He was righteous. He was a principled individual. He was a man who had a right standing with God. He is a man who pursued holiness. So he's perfect. He's upright. And it also says, and one that feared God. He feared God. And really, that explains he was perfect and upright. He feared God. That is, in his heart was a high esteem for God. He had an honor for God. He had a regard for God. He stood in awe of the Lord. And he had affection for God. All that means is that he had a reverence for the Lord. And reverence for God is contrary to high-mindedness or pride and arrogance. We read in Romans 11 and verse 20, be not high-minded, but fear. So to have this reverence, you're not going to be proud or arrogant. So he was a humble man. And everywhere that you see the reverence of God, you see humility, of course, goes with it. So he feared God. It also says that he eschewed evil. That is the direct result of his reverence for God. An individual that has reverence for God will eschew evil. And if an individual does not eschew evil, it's because there is an irreverence for the Lord. So, as a result of reverence to God, no matter how fashionable sin was, he abstained. And he shunned it and renounced it. He eschewed evil. God testified the very same things of this man Job in Job 1:8 and also in 2 and verse 3. But he added in both of those places, he's my servant. He's my servant. That is, he's committed to me. This is God speaking. He is devoted to me. He has an allegiance toward me. He is surrendered and submitted to me. He is obedient to me. I am his attention, his focus, his priority is me. He's my servant. He's identified with me. He's associated with me in his life. He's my servant. That means I am his motive. I am his aim. I am his impulse. I am his passion. I am his priority of life. I am his purpose in life. He is my servant. That is, he is invested in me. This is God saying, he is my servant. In addition to what is said of Job in Job chapter 1, verse 1, God had said of him in chapter 2, verse 3, and still he holdeth fast. And still. That is, in spite of losing his children, in spite of losing his wealth, this is God speaking to Satan, he holdeth fast. That is, he is firm, he's secure, he holds securely his integrity. In other words, what that means is he remained who he was. You took away all of his wealth. You took away all of his children. And he remained who he was. What a testimony. You see, the whole root goes back to who he was. People will say, well, sure. I don't know if I could do that. Well, none of us do. But we can be assured if we do not have that character, we can't. I mean, it's that simple. Now in verse 2, so we see something of his character. And the tragedy, through the tragedy, he remained who he was. In verse 2, we read a simple statement, and there were born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters. They were born that way, by the way. 7 males, 3 females. They were born that way. There were born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters. What does that mean? Besides that he had 10 children. Well, it means that God blessed him. God blessed him with 10 children. And he remained who he was for God. And that's not an unusual statement because a lot of people who are blessed do not maintain their integrity. The blessings of God make many forget God. Job is abundantly blessed of God. And yet, he remains who he is. Now you consider 7 sons, 3 daughters. He reared these children, he and his wife. So during that time, there were responsibilities. You have 10 children, you have a lot of responsibilities. through all those responsibilities, he remained who he was. 10 children means that he had a lot of cares and concerns. But through all those cares and concerns, he remained who he was. You have 10 children, you've got burdens. You've got burdens. There's also trials. Children are a blessing, but with children come trials. There are also burdens, difficulties. 7 sons, 3 daughters, and he remained who he was for God because of who he was. Then in verse 3, we read of his abundance of wealth. And most are of the mindset that this wealth is the direct result of his faithfulness to God. That sort of lines up with Satan's philosophy. And it really isn't in line with the rest of the book. I believe that he had this wealth as because God was gracious to him. Not saying he didn't work. Certainly he did. But the amazing and marvelous thing is that in spite of all of this wealth, he remained who he was for God. He remained who he was for God. In other words, he had wealth, but his wealth didn't have him. It's the same with his children. He had children, but his children didn't have him. That is, they didn't dictate his life. God dictated his life. A lot of people will never understand that. They never will. They'll never grasp it. We also read of his fame and reputation, no doubt because of his wealth. It says, so that this man was the greatest of all the men of the East. So he had fame. He was a man of prominence. He was a man who was esteemed and well known by others. And again, most are of the mindset that this is the direct result of his faithfulness to God. But again, what is marvelous here is that in spite of his fame and reputation, in spite of his prominence, he remained who he was for God. That can't be said of a whole lot of folks. He remained who he was for God in spite of fame, in spite of reputation, in spite of stature. So we see something of his character. We see he has 10 children. He's a man of great wealth. In verse 4, we also see that he has a very blessed and happy family. His family is unlike Abraham's household, where there was an Ishmael who mocked Isaac. Wasn't like Isaac's household when there was an Esau and a Jacob. It wasn't like Jacob's household where there was a Joseph and all his brothers were envious of him to the point where they couldn't stand him. Nor was it like David's household, where there was perpetual strife and bickering. But as you read verse 4, you see that it is obvious that the children of Job are grown. They're adults. They're comfortably settled in their own homes. That's what adults do. That's what adults do. They don't run home to mom and dad. And we see his children were comfortably settled in their own homes. It appears that they were doing pretty well financially, seen from the fact that they were feasting. It also appears that they were unified. It says, and his sons went and feasted in their houses, everyone his day. There was like it was a rotation. They took turns and sent and called their 3 sisters. They looked after one another to eat and drink with them. 10 children. And they all get along. What a blessing. What a blessing. I mean, if you have 2 children today, you're doing good if they get along. I'm talking about adult children. He's got 10. And they seem to be happy. And he remained who he was. He never lost sight of God. He's a blessed man. But he did not lose sight of everything that's written of him in verse 1. Then notice his life. Prior to the tragedy, when all was going well with Job, going well with his children, we are told in verse 5 that Job had a passion for his children's spiritual well-being. And you know what that goes back to? Verse 1. That's the root of everything, verse 1. It's who this man was. Because of who he was, he had a spirit, he had a passion for his children's spirituality. Now his children are adults. Most of us have adult children. There's a thing with adult children, their problems are bigger than when they were little. When they were little, they had problems that you could fix. When they become adults, they're problems that you can't fix. There's a big difference. And you don't stop being mom and dad because your children are grown. You don't interfere in their life like you did when they were little. But you don't stop being mom and dad. You don't stop caring. You don't stop being concerned for them. And we have Job as an example here. So we see after his children's feasting, it said Job sent. And I believe what that means is that Job would remind his children, okay, you have feasted. Don't neglect your spiritual well-being. Job continued to be a spiritual influence in their life. I no longer have the authority to tell my children how to dress. I wish I did, but I don't. I don't have the authority to tell them you can't go there. Don't have that authority. I did it one time, but I don't now. But I am still to have a spiritual influence in their life. And it is not meddling when we remind them what you're doing is wrong. They say, well, it's not your business. Well, it is my business. It is our business. As their parents, it is our business. And Job sent, that is, he remained a spiritual influence in their life. And the fact that all was well with them materially and socially did not change this. You ask many today, how's your son or how's your daughter? Oh, they're doing great. And they'll go on and tell you about their jobs. Well, what about their spirituality? Many, I think, have forgotten that that still matters, even if they have a good job. That's what really matters. Job didn't lose sight of this. It says he sanctified them. What does that mean? It means he set his children apart for the Lord. Again, he doesn't have the same authority in their life, but he can do this. Lord, they're yours. They're yours. I give them to you. You do with them as you please. He sanctified them. Now we should do that when our, we should have done that when our children were small. I've had parents tell me through the years, oh, I sure hope the Lord doesn't call my son to be a pastor or a missionary. Well, you're wrong. That's a wrong spirit. You ought to sanctify them to the Lord. That is, Lord, whatever it is that you, however you want to use them, they're yours. That's the right spirit. And he sanctified them. He set his children apart for the Lord. It also says he offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. He invested himself in his children's well-being. Why did he offer these offerings? Notice what it says. It may be. Three words. It may be. It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. He says, I don't know everything they're doing, and I certainly do not know their heart. And it may be, it's possible, that they have sin in their life, in their heart. So he prayed for them. So though he realized outwardly everything seemed to be well with his children, he also realized it may be. It may be that there's sin in their life. And he prayed for his children. We ought to pray for our adult children that way. Lord, I don't know their heart. But Lord, you do. And if there's sin in their lives, Lord, would you protect them? Lord, would you spare them? Lord, would you reveal yourself to them? And this is Job, again, before the tragedy, praying for his children. So he doesn't know what's going on in his the hearts of his children, but he knows the one that does. So he prays. He prays for their spiritual well-being. And he did so passionately, it says, that he rose up early in the morning to do this. He'd rise up early in the morning when he couldn't be disturbed. And he prayed for his children. If children have parents that get up early in the morning and pray for them, let me tell you something. When those parents are gone, you have suffered a loss that you're not even aware of. What a loss. That's true of all of us. If we have people that pray for us and they pass away, the loss is beyond words. There aren't many that will rise up early in the morning and pray for you. There aren't many parents who will rise up early in the morning and pray for their children. But that's what Job did. And why did he do it? Because of who he was. Goes back to the root of his life, verse 1. Following the loss of his material wealth and the death of his children, I believe that Job went out to that place where he did what he did in verse 5, where he offered burnt offerings. And that's when we see him in verses 20 through 22. And he's in that place where he'd offered burnt offerings. He had that place where he prayed. Had that place where he got alone with God. We need that. Following the loss of his health in chapter 2, I believe again that Job went out to the place where he offered burnt offerings. Verse 8, and he took him, of chapter 2, he took him a posture to scrape himself withal, and he sat down among the ashes. And all the commentaries say the same thing if they covered it all. The ashes refer to the ruins of his material wealth. I don't believe that's true at all. I believe it goes back to verse 5. All those burnt offerings that he offered for his children. All the ashes that were there. And that was a special place for Job. And he's back there again. He's back there again in chapter 2, sitting in the ashes. And what's he doing? He's praying. And he's worshiping God. Why? Because of who he was. Again, it goes back to chapter 1 and verse 1. Verse 9, his wife said, "Dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die." It is implied there that Job was worshiping God. And his wife couldn't believe it. How can you still worship God after all of this? Because of who I am. That's the only answer. Because of who he was. So you see, the all this did not uproot his roots to God. That's why it's so important to be deeply rooted in Christ, deeply rooted to God. Because there are going to be things in life that are going to attempt to uproot us. And they will, if we're not deeply rooted, where it makes us who we are. It shouldn't be simply, I was raised in church all my life. Well, I hope it's more than that. Because let me tell you something, that's not going to get you through some of the trials that's coming your way. You need deep roots in the God. James 5, verse 11, we have another place where Job is mentioned. We count them happy which endure. Ye have heard of the patience of Job. The endurance of Job. Why was Job able to endure? Because of who he was. And then in chapter 13 and 15 of Job, we hear Job say, "Though he slay me, yet will I trust in him." That's quite a statement. Even if he kills me, I'm going to still trust him. How could he make that statement? Because of who he was. So it all goes back to that first verse. The lesson is, of course, we need to be. We need to be what God would have us to be. And if we be what God would have us to be, we'll do what God would have us to do. But Job is a remarkable man. But you and I can do the same. We can do the same. But we have to be what he was. We have to be spiritually mature. We have to be upright. People that fear God. People that eschew evil. Faith, whether in profession or possession, will be tried. It will be tried. And it will show who we are. When the Lord tries our faith, it shows who we are. And if we have the characteristics of Job, thank the Lord. Because we didn't get those characteristics outside of him. And then Job's friends are going to come along. Let me tell you something. If you are who you ought to be for God, many of your so-called friends aren't going to be able to stand it. And they're going to be looking for holes in your life. They're going to be looking. We know the world does that. But not only does the world do it, even those who love us do it sometimes because they can't stand it. can't stand it. But all that whatever happens in our life, that it doesn't uproot our roots to God. Our roots need to go deeper than Home Baptist Church or to Mom and Dad or to Grandma and Grandpa. Our roots need to go to God. That's what will enable us to stand. Brother Tim, if you'd come and lead us for a song. Let's all stand.